Hello and welcome to another episode of Economics, Mix Belt M-I-X, Economics Podcast. This is Tariq joining you along with Jayant.
Yo guys, what's happening?
It's a new year, Jayant, and this is the first podcast we are recording in the new year since we put out the podcast about our favorite books of 2020 and our friends of the podcast who had also shared their choice of books. That was a few weeks ago. In between those weeks, quite a lot has happened. And as we are putting this podcast out, quite a lot is also going to be happening on the India front because tomorrow the budget is going to be unveiled. What Pandora's box opens there, we do not know yet.
Get your popcorns ready.
as we get ready for seeing how the budget unfolds. But we are here to talk about another popcorn-worthy economics moment that is happening in the financial markets currently, Jayant. Everybody's talking about it. And by talking about it, I mean making memes about it. Because it in itself has been a very meme-driven moment, which is, of course, Lafayette GameStop. And what is going on with this stock called GameStop in the US stock market. So bring everybody up to speed. A lot of people would have heard a lot of different versions of what's going on out there, but to strip it down to its bare essentials, certain people had taken positions in the GameStop stock where they would profit if the stock went down. How, we will talk about in a moment, Jayant will explain. And certain other people ganged together and decided to take the exact opposite spot. Now, those two things are nothing new. That's exactly how the market works, Jayant.
Yes, pretty much.
The bears and
sellers, bulls and bears.
The bulls and the bears have to be there for it to function. So that's par for the course. But what happened next is what has defined this moment, because this ragtag army of, you know, almost like the rebels from Star Wars blew up the Death Star of a hedge fund because the position that this hedge fund had taken in terms of betting on the fact that the shares of this company called GameStop, which is a video games retailer, will drop because, you know, their financial performance and all that has not been great. It's a brick and mortar retail business. They're an okay
or to put it, old economy stock.
Kind of an old economy stock, yes. Hawking a new economy product of video games. But like you said, Jayant, what we were discussing before we were recording this pod, that GameStop is a company that's pretty popular still. You were talking about its value in terms of gifting.
Yes, I mean, it is most sought after gifting destination for millennials, people of our ages, in terms of when they want to gift someone, it is the third or the fourth most destination to go there, because they sell not only games, they not only retail games, they also do, they sell collectibles and all, which people tend to go there and explore things.
So obviously this is a reasonably well-to-do company. It's not spectacularly profitable. It's not huge growth. So you can understand why somebody would take a reasonable bet that it could the stock price could go down because it's a little overvalued. But what they did not count on is that the stock price would do exactly the opposite and go up multiple fold. GameStop suddenly became a multi-bagger out of nowhere. And that has put the markets in a tizzy and everybody's confused as to what's going on. So that's what we'll try to talk about. But to begin talking about this idea, Jayant, I think we need to begin with that how, if somebody is betting on a share price going down, how does one place a bet on that? And, you know, people must have heard the word short. And of course, a lot of our listeners themselves have read the book, The Big Short, and have probably seen the movie. So they know the word short a little bit. But let's try and define it a little better. So Jayant, if you can explain to our listeners what a short is about.
So short selling is not like how a famous Bevar Se Kudka selling is short. It's more like, so short selling means investing in a security so that investor benefits when the price of that asset goes down. So basically an investor is betting against the asset wherein he thinks that it will not appreciate, it will depreciate where the value goes down. And when value goes down, he tries to profit from it. So that's short selling for you.
Okay, so that's short selling according to the textbook or the Investopedia definition. Could you probably explain with an example as to how exactly do you take this position? Or how exactly do you, practically speaking, make this bet where you would profit if the price of something went down? Because it kind of sounds counterintuitive that if the price of something went down, how do you make money? Because usually in stocks, you invest in a stock and you hope the price goes up, buy low, sell high. Yeah. Is the usual stock market funda. So how does the shorting work?
So here the investor does the reverse, which is investor borrows an asset or a stock from the lender and he sells that in the market, thinking that in a future date, he will buy it back at a lower price, then again, lend it back, give it back to the lender and whatever the buying and selling prices, he'll profit in between. Did you guys get this?
I think they did not get it.
Okay, hang on.
So let's try and break it down with an example, Jayan.
Okay, so example here might be, now imagine you borrow a Pokemon cards deck from a friend, which is 100 rupees in value. You borrow it from your friend.
And your friend wants it back. They tell you that, yes, Jayant, you're taking the Pokemon card deck, but you know, please give it back to me later. And
so you have to give it to him in a month or a 2 month in terms of thing. You have to return it back to him. Now you know that when this was bought and this worth is 100 rupees, but you know that it's already 2-3 months old and you know its value is going to go down. So you take this and you sell it in the market for 90 rupees. You sit over it. And at the end of 1 month, when your friend asks for the, what do you call, the deck pack, you go and buy it at 90 and you give it back to him. So,
or applies lower than 90 because you were hoping that, yes, the price would fall.
Yeah. So whatever the spread is between your selling and bought back thing is what the profit is. So that's how, in a simplified version of short selling, is with an example of Pokemon deck.
So, and speaking of that Pokemon deck, so essentially, let's say you sold it to the market at 90 rupees. Remember, you only have to give the deck back to your friend. So the price doesn't matter there. That's what you've borrowed it temporarily. Then after a month, if the price is, let's say, 80 rupees, you just buy it off the market at 80 rupees and you take that deck and give it back to your friend. And the difference between the selling price and the buying price is your profit. And of course, you profited because the price went down, because if the price had gone up, your friend still wants the Pokemon deck, but you'd have to pay extra money to get it back. And that's where your bet would kind of backfire, or, you know, any bet, you could gain money or lose money. So this is how you could lose money. The only difference being, Jayant, that price has a floor, but technically it has no ceiling. So here, the maximum profit you could make is, even if it dropped to zero, the maximum profit you could make out of this whole arrangement with your friend and the Pokemon deck was, let's say, 90 rupees, because that's what you had originally sort of sold it in the market at. If the price dropped to zero, you would have just bought it and given it back to your friend. But if the price went higher, there is, theoretically speaking, no limit to that. And as we will find out, that exact thing plays a very central role in trying to understand what's going on with GameStop. So, Jen, the history of short selling, or what's going on out here with the GameStop situation, is what's called a short squeeze. So a quick word from you on what exactly that maneuver is and what's going on there.
So short squeeze is basically when you're trying to buy it from the market to return it back to the lender, there's lack of supply and of the asset or the stock, and the demand for it is increasing in terms of prices going up, and you try at every point of time to buy at higher cost, and it keeps moving up. So it's like a self-fulfilling loop wherein you want to return it back, so you have to buy it, and you are buying it at any price, and the price keep increasing, and because you're buying it, because the supply is short and the demand is high, the price is increasing, and that is what you're seeing in terms of the skyrocketing of the GameStop stock, which went from a micro cap to mid cap to a large cap to a giant cap, which is almost within 1 or 2 weeks. And we all know what happened to the hedge fund who was more or less short on the stocks. I mean, they were more or less taken into cleaners.
Completely wiped out. Yes. That was Melvin Capital, which was one of the hedge funds which was involved in this, who had taken that position. But this short squeeze and things like that happening, particularly in the American market, or for that matter in other places as well, and we'll come to the Indian experience a little later, but it's not uncommon. We had a very famous case, one of our favorite financial cases, Jayant.
Yes.
Between Porsche and Volkswagen back close to the recession in 2008. So there was a famous case of a short squeeze where that particular year, Porsche, the car maker, earned almost how much, Jayant?
They earned close to $8 billion of profit. So there was a joke on the street that Porsche is good at investing, and they also make good cars.
So the $8 billion was almost 90% of their profit for the year, and all of it came from one trade, or the trades that they were doing. So essentially, the trade was the fact that Porsche had been building up positions in Volkswagen. Porsche was a small company. It did not have the kind of size or the assets or the sales of a Volkswagen, because Volkswagen is one of the world's largest car makers, as everybody knows. And they were trying to acquire a controlling stake in Volkswagen. So initially, they build up their shareholding, which goes beyond, I think, about 30% or so in the first go, and their voting rights also went up to almost 50% or a little more. So they essentially were trying to gain control, but a lot of other financiers, hedge funds, and again, just to explain to everybody this concept of hedge funds, essentially hedge funds are there to try and take advantage of these market anomalies where they feel the market is not pricing something right. So they bet against those kind of things, and that's why they are hedge funds. They take huge bets in the millions and billions of dollars in the hopes of earning their clients or investors huge amounts of returns. Hedge funds constantly take risky maneuvers like these. So at that point of time, a lot of hedge funds, I think if we could name a couple of them, there were Mayfair and Greenwich and people like that, who started shorting the Volkswagen stock because they felt that Porsche was not serious about actually acquiring Volkswagen. Porsche made it worse by actually making statements by saying that they're not looking at acquiring a dominant control of the company. And nobody believed it because Porsche was just not big enough.
The counterparts in other countries were filing for Chapter 11, which is the GMs of the world, and other guys were filing for bankruptcies during the recession. And they just thought that this is not simply possible.
But at the same time, bankers had warned that, this could be a risky move that they are making, because a Morgan Stanley banker said that, they're essentially essentially playing what was called billionaire's poker against Volkswagen and Porsche, by taking a position exactly opposite. So as Porsche acquired more number of shares in Volkswagen, the share price of Volkswagen kept going up. But the management managers felt that it has to fall because, you know, these guys are not serious. They have, you know, traded in currency market derivatives and all that before, and they are probably not serious about this either, because what Porsche was doing at that point of time was buying a lot of options on Volkswagen shares, which is basically not directly buying the share, but just buying a claim, buy the share at a particular price. And as the name suggests, it was an option. They could buy it or they could just choose not to buy it, for which you pay sort of a premium. The result of that was that eventually Porsche finally announced that they want to take over Volkswagen, and they did because their shareholding, I think, went up to 75%. In fact, they announced, I think, literally one day after Lehman Brothers went bankrupt on September 16, 2008, they announced that if you ignore the options, they already have 35% stake in Volkswagen. And if they were to exercise their options, it would go up to about 40% or so. In fact, if you do the rest of the calculation, they found out, most of the traders found out that the shareholding was close to actually 75% if they went through with all of their trades. The result was that all the hedge fund managers then finally realized that the price of the Volkswagen share is not going to go down anytime soon. And that's when your short squeeze comes into the picture, that all these guys rushed to close their positions. Now, to close their positions, remember, they had taken the positions by saying that they would deliver shares and they would buy them off the market. So they would have to buy them off the market at any price. And the loop that you were talking about, that the more they buy, the more the price goes up. And they were stuck in this weird loop. Which drove a few of these hedge funds to the brink, made a lot of money, because Volkswagen shares went up from around 200 euros to more than 1,000 euros,
yes,
making Volkswagen one of the most valuable companies on the planet.
Yes, I mean, at one point of time, it was worth more than ExxonMobil, Apple, and PetroChina all put together, I suppose. And remember, the cars and the economy was in recession. I mean, this is the time. And at one point of time, it went 60% or like that in one single day or in a couple of days. And this is like the largest company in Germany going up. I mean, it was crazy.
And of course, the company issued a very famous statement when somebody asked that, oh, you made so much of profit off of this bet. So, you know, are you a company that makes cars or are you a hedge fund? And the company spokesperson said that, oh, we make money from hedging and building cars. The difference is that hedge funds don't make cars, the last time we checked. If you're thinking that short squeeze and, you know, what's happening with GameStop and things like that are relatively modern phenomena, it's necessarily not, because Jayanth has a story that dates back even further than the Volkswagen story. Almost 100 years, Jayanth, is that correct?
Yes. We need to go back in time. I think we need to invent a time machine to go back. And the year is 1919. And when a gentleman known as Clarence Saunders, who was to be credited to be invented the first modern supermarket by the name Piggly Wiggly in US. So before, at that point of time, people used to go into a store, give the clerk a list of things which they need, and the clerk, people in the shop used to gather around all the things and they bought out and they used to bill. And Saunders just changed the entire game of retailing, which he made it as a self-service market where people could go around the store, pick up whatever they want, and then come to the billing thing and do the billing. And people loved the idea, and it was instant click. I mean, in 3 years, they opened more than 1,200 stores across US. And with this success, he was approached by so many mom and pop stores across US for a franchisee to license the name Piggly Wiggly and run it on the similar thing. And as we were heading towards 1922, because of the slowdown, a lot of this guys who had franchised or licensed the name, these stores were not doing that well compared to vis-a-vis your original stores run by the founder himself. So the traders in Wall Street, which is back in New York, smelled blood, and they started shorting Piggly Wiggly shares in the stock exchange. And within a week, share dropped from 50 to $40 share, and they started spreading rumors that company is going belly up because of the stores are not doing that much of sales in terms of the overall expectation. And with this, the founder wanted to end this rumor, but he didn't know how, so decided that he himself will land in New York. He borrowed $10 million of loan from various banks, and he landed in New York, and he assembled a team of brokers. So like an Avengers, he assembled a team of brokers. And there
Brokers
is,
assembled.
well, yes, and it had one particular gentleman who all traders worship even today. It had Jesse Livermore as one of the gentlemen who was in the massive campaign with the Sanders to go against the brokers of the Wall Street. And with the flush of cash, they started buying, and there was like 2 lakh shares outstanding available in the market to be picked up. And slowly and secretly, they started buying in like 10,000, 20,000 shares in 1 or 2 weeks. And within 2, 3 weeks, he almost had half of it in terms of the overall shares, and the prices started moving up from 40, it moved to 75. And the shorts were the guys who were shorting at to cover it at 90, and it moved to 100 and even touched 124. Now, newer shorts coming out started coming at newer prices. Now he had to up the game in terms of the overall thing, but the plan was he had to pivot the plan because the governing committee of the exchange announced that they're going to stop the trading and of the share of Piggly Wiggly. Well, didn't we hear this term a couple of days ago?
Recently, so when
Yes.
I think Robinhood and a couple of other apps actually stop people from buying more GameStop
Yes.
shares, which caused huge controversy. We'll come back to that point, but yes, Jed, let's go
Yes.
back to the story.
So and also the exchange extended the number of days for the guys who were shorting the shares to buy it back in terms of they gave them more time. And with more time, they went off across US, bought all the shares from the widows and orphans, who are the retail guys, the other side of the trade who were sitting over it. The brokers then bought it and delivered to the exchange, and they covered all the shares. And the end of the story, the founder was left holding a bag full of shares and also a loan of debt of 10 million. He had lost, and unfortunately, the guy who took on Wall Street lost the game there. So this is straight out of book Business Adventure. In chapter 8, it is brilliantly explained in terms of what has happened. If someone wants to explore that, they can go back and read through it. So this is what has happened 100 years ago in US, and back home here in late 80s.
Yes, let's talk about another entrepreneur trying to bust a short by bringing the brokers out. Yes, Jen, take us through that one.
So there's this particular gentleman known as Dhirubhai Ambani, who there's a bear cartel from Kolkata and various other places who were giving sleepless night to motorbike, and they were shorting Reliance like no
by
tomorrow.
essentially shorting the Reliance stock.
Stock. And so Mr. Ambani had enough of these guys, and he wanted to set some example in terms of thing. So he assembled his own Avengers in terms of to take on the cartels, and they started buying Reliance shares like there is no tomorrow. And in this case, well, like they say, Ambani never loses. Well, he did won it against the brokers, and brokers were taken to cleaners because they had to cover the short at very huge prices and they had to suffer losses. And that's how Mr. Ambani took on the famous bear cartel and won the war in terms of the shorting of Reliance. So these are fascinating stories for someone who thinks that these are happening for first time. Well, history does not rhyme, but it still repeats in various other formats.
So this repeat that we are seeing, of course, in India, the rules and regulations have changed, and you know, technically the short selling is severely restricted. I would not really call it banned, because there is ways of betting against a stock by other means, but it's a little more restrictive environment under the Indian regulations than it is under the American regulations. You know, so putting the free market, I guess. But that's exactly what made it possible for people from a Reddit message board to gang together and just simply coordinate and decide to take the other side of the trade that a big rich hedge fund had taken. And in this whole tug of war, they happened to actually win this time. Well, at least for the moment, although Jayant, we don't know how it eventually ends.
No one knows.
Badly for somebody.
Yes, it has already ended badly for few.
One hedge fund at the minimum. More have booked losses as well. So, this seems to have become a trend. And you know, thanks to the internet, of course, we have seen the influence of the internet on financial products like this in the recent past, and that's something interesting that's developing. You might recall the cryptocurrency Dogecoin, which was basically an internet meme, which the guy took to just create a cryptocurrency out of it just for fun. And people actually bought and held that cryptocurrency, and it still trades. In fact, recently after Elon Musk tweeted about it, the price of Dogecoin actually went up a little bit amidst all the Bitcoin frenzy that is happening.
Yes, I mean, it went up only 4x, so that is a little bit.
So this is not the 17x as far as the GameStop share has gone. But Jayant, yes. What has changed? How is this situation different from how typically these battle in terms of the shorts typically play out?
So typically all this battle, I mean, we have been reading, we always were curious in our econ classes in terms of how this entity allocates money and things. So before it used to be played out, it's more like bigger guys used to battle it out, which is institutional versus institutional game it was, wherein people used to whisper, rumor around, group up, and they wanted to take out each other to satisfy the egos, which if you see the Wall Street movie 2, in which they take out each other in terms of to satisfy the egos in terms of the ideas which they might believe or they might not believe in terms. So this is how the battle was fought till now.
So it was now, basically more Godzilla versus Kong kind of a battle, yes, between two big giants which were taking it out.
Yeah. And this time the game is completely different. It's more like, to put it from historical reference, it's like David versus Goliath, wherein small number of traders or investors who are coming together and taking out big funds out, taking it to cleaners. And this had to be done in terms of confluence of information, which is now it has broken up because of the social media, internet. Everyone is exposed to so much of information, which everyone else is now. Before, it was information was asymmetry, wherein only few would get privileged information. Now it's exposed to everything, and with the data and easy to access platforms like so many of them, you can trade through apps and the forums like social media, like Twitter, Reddit, and we come together and they discuss, and they're coming together and taking out the whole idea. And the other thing is, it's not someone like just sitting who are just blindly buying. If you read some of the analysis on this stock itself, in hindsight, some of them have written fundamental due diligence on the stocks, really brilliantly written in terms of the thing. Some of them are like, it's like your Occupy Wall Street, and they're putting money where the mouth is. So some of them are actually
class warfare as well, right?
Yes. So some of them have seen their parents lose out job, they themselves having too much of student debt. They've seen this happen in 2008, their own debt getting built up, their house getting sold out and things. And they want to, they had no clue at that point of time how to take out. Now they've all graduated, they're into some job or the other, they have saved up some money and they're taking the activism investment to the next level. And all this is leading to more general phenomena, which is democratizing of the finance and investing thing. So in a way, it's good. I'm not saying whatever they're doing is correct and thing. There's no moral judgment out here because everyone else has their own mind in the markets, they say. But this phenomena is something new.
And interesting, which might have implications for the financial economy as well. But it's only if it sustains and it's not, let's say, one-off like what is going on here. But again, Jayant, like we talked about before we recorded we started recording this episode, the effect at the end of the day, it's just that one hedge fund took a bet. A bet always has a positive and a negative. It could turn out one way or another. It turned out to be a bad bet. Again, in an open marketplace, this is exactly what you would expect to happen. I guess it's probably getting more focus and spotlight mainly because it just happens to be a big hedge fund and the whole narrative is very enticing to look at.
Yes.
And it's pretty meme-worthy, like we said at the beginning, there has been...
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of hard one happening in particular the insti side of thing where people are not taking these guys seriously. And the other thing is what I have seen is whenever these guys succeed, when they taken out a company out, take debt, leverage it up, and when a lot of jobs, job cuts are done and profit is increased and all, it's celebrated in front pages. But when these same people, when they themselves lose the money on such bets, it's looked upon like something is not right or it's totally wrong. How can this happen? Kind of thing. So that's the beauty of market. There's no moral judgment. Some days you win, some days you lose. But what is important is make sure that when you lose less, and when you win big. So that is one in terms of lesson. I want to take out of this episode, and it's still not ended. So looking forward to what happens.
We could bring you a follow-up episode about what would happen there, but hopefully this sheds some light on what is going on with this whole GameStop story and sort of helps you understand the idea behind why short selling exists in the first place, or why is it considered good or bad, and how throughout history we have seen these episodes, and we've only brought you two or three that we picked out because we like them. But there are so many other episodes or so many other such stories that you can look at where such situations have happened, which have driven either companies or hedge funds or investors onto bankruptcy. And it's a tale as old as time. As long as there are markets, there will be winners and there will be losers. And the nature of those winners and losers will change, which will be what will be the fascinating thing to keep looking out for. You can read more about this in our latest edition of the newsletter as well. We'll be sending it out very soon. Our monthly newsletter, you can subscribe to it at economist.substack.com. And you can also visit our Instagram page, instagram.com/economist, or subscribe to this podcast in whatever podcasting platform you listen to. Jayant, anything to plug before we log off the podcast?
Enjoy the game. Game is still on.
It's not stopped. See you guys next time.
See you guys. Stay safe. Take care.